Well, hot damn, all you slashers and survivor girls. We got ourselves another episode of the Creepin' a Real Horrorcast for you. I am that good buddy Lunchbox, and I am super happy you guys decided to stop on by. I do say so. And if this is your first time, you know, creeping in, welcome. I'm glad you're here as well. So, just to get into all of my little perks, for all you newcomers and all you old veterans, if you guys would like to shoot me over a suggestion or just say hey and, you know, see how things are going, you can always reach me at creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com if you'd like to use the emails. Or if you want a quick chatty chat, just go on to Instagram or the Facebooks and just go to @creepinitreal, and that's R-E-E-L. And I mean, I got my phone on me pretty much 24/7. So yeah, just hit me up and shoot me over some suggestions. This week, we actually have our first real fan suggestion. This is actually from one of my old friends, like ice hockey days. Paula suggested that we actually went into, it's the 1990 It movie. Now, we've actually done the remake, part one of It. So I thought it would be actually be nice just to go ahead and just go ahead and jump right on into the original OG, the one that kind of got everybody into it if they didn't read the book type of thing. So, big ol' thanks to Paula, and hey, hope everything's going good for you. Now, moving into the episode, I wanted to actually start off actually talking about the book a little bit. Now, Stephen King, this is probably next to like Pet Sematary and Misery, this has to be probably one of my all-time favorite Stephen King stories. I do say that the Shining is really good, but it's one of those things where that kind of falls into like a weird category for me, because like with the we actually did a retrospective of the like all forms of the Shining, going in from the book to the, you know, the Jack Nicholson version, and then to the like the made for TV movie, and just kind of doing a comparison. So that was actually really interesting to do. But in doing that, even though that the book was still, it had a lot of like scary moments and like it really amped it up, the movies actually for me, I don't know, in a weird way, like hold up a little bit better. Granted, yes, the Kubrick one does like tend to like go sluggish in some areas, and Shelley Duvall's a little interesting, but it's like, yeah, go back and listen to that retrospective and hear all of our thoughts on that. But moving in for It, I remember as a kid watching the movie first, like the 90s TV movie first. My dad thought that it was actually okay for me to watch, because since it was on TV, it wasn't like overly bloody, wasn't super violent, so he thought it was pretty safe. Even though, yes, it is dealing with, you know, a clown, and he didn't know how I would take to that, but I instantly loved Pennywise. Like, I was, I really, really dug it. Shooting forward, back into my adult days, I was actually working at a screen printing shop, and I was on one of the large presses, and I would just go in day after day, just putting on shirts and just printing. And so I got really bored, and I would, you know, just throw on some headphones and just listen to all types of music and whatnot. But then I got bored with that because it was just continuous. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to start downloading audiobooks. And I remember listening to a lot of books like, I actually went through the entire Lord of the Rings series, The Hobbit, which was fucking really interesting to actually listen to everything, just because there's a lot of singing in those books, which is feels like a lot of filler. But I digress. That's not Lord of the Rings time. But I also, you know, listened to Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, Dracula. I did like a couple of like Sherlock Holmes books, like Hounds of the Baskervilles. So I did some classic stuff, and then I came across it on an audio file. So I was like, you know what? I've never actually, you know, went through the novel. I've only seen the TV movie. So I got into that, and it was really – it made me uncomfortable. And it only made me uncomfortable in one section. And thank God they didn't do anything close to that for the TV movie. So to lead up into it, I love how Stephen was – he kind of mixed everything together where you're getting the point of view from both or from each character, but it's from their childhood mixed into their adulthood. And it's some of it seems like it bounces around quite a bit, but it doesn't feel like you're getting whiplash, or it's like, okay, well, wait a second. Wait, we were just with this guy. Why are we now with this guy? It actually kind of explains and somehow gives like from what I remember, like a fairly good transition. The one thing that I do love about that and the way that Stephen wrote it was, from what I remember, there was those parts where it was leading up to it. Like, so let's say we're going in with the Ben story. Well, Ben, you could see him as a kid, and it felt nice and light. And yeah, he's dealing with the bullies, but it felt like a normal story. And then when Pennywise shows up and he makes his presence known, the whole tone of the book completely changes. It's almost like the air gets sucked out of the room. It gives you this instant terror that the monster's here. And this is all just from it, like from what I got out of an audiobook. And that gave me a really cool feeling that there was a threat, and he just nailed it. It was great. Now, the part that got me was as the kids were down in the sewer fighting it for the first time, they're fighting Pennywise. They did the whole gimmick of "we're not afraid of you," and that initially hurt Pennywise to the point of him, you know, scurrying off, right? Well, after that, in the movie, they go through and they say, "Promise me you'll never go away," type of thing. Or if it comes back, you'll come back. That, yeah. Right? Well, in the book, they decide that they can never lose what they have. They have to stay together, but they have to figure out how to stay connected spiritually, I guess. And so Beverly, I guess, decides that she is going to go ahead, and they basically just run a train on her. And these are kids. They all have sex together, and that is supposed to keep them all connected. And I was very uncomfortable listening to that. And then I was just like, I know Steven had his problems with like drugs and alcohol, but holy shit, are you kidding me? Like, this is like, he's had a couple of these in the stories where I had to go like, what the fuck is happening? But like, this one made me uncomfortable. But it didn't ruin the end all be all story. Like, so the book is very, very big, and it's well worth the read, for sure. It's just that one part is kind of like, what are you doing there, buddy? But moving into the movie. Now, I could not find any actual production cost on this thing. Since this was made for, it was a TV movie. I know there they did have a good amount of special effects in there. I mean, compare, you know, mixed with like the makeup for Pennywise and what have you. So, I mean, I knew it would definitely cost some stuff, but I could not find any actual pricing on that. But I also have to admonish myself for the last couple of episodes, because I'm such a jabroni and new to this thing. I mean, I listened to Meg do this shit forever, and I don't know why I can't think of it, but I completely forgot to tell you guys who the directors were in the last film. So, my bad. That's a bad lunchbox. Won't do it again. So, getting into the perks for this, we have our director for this whole shindig. For this part one and part two, we got Tommy Lee Wallace. And then it is written by Stephen King. Tommy Lee Wallace did the screenplay, or I guess the final screenplay for it, but it was also done by Lawrence D. Cohen, who I guess started the whole thing. He was the one that actually got the original manuscript from Stephen King in order to, I guess, like, he was also responsible for like Tommyknockers. And the reason that Tommy Lee Wallace took over and finished the initial, you know, screenplay for it was, I guess, Cohen was working on Carrie at the time and wasn't able to finish it, so he had to, you know, Tommy had to go ahead and jump on it and all that good shit. But still, I think it worked. But for the big crew here, this is going to be a big long one because we're going into both the adults and the kiddos. Now, starting at the top of the list here, we got Harry Anderson as Richie Tozier, Dennis Christopher as Eddie Kasprak, Richard Mauch, I don't know if I'm saying that name right, as Stanley Uris, Annette O'Toole as Beverly Marsh, Tim Reed as Mike Hanlon, John Ritter, God, I love him, I miss him, as Ben Hanscom, Richard Thomas as Bill Dembro, and then we have Tim Curry as the ultimate and almighty Pennywise, the Dancing Clown. Now for the kiddos, we actually come up with Jonathan Brandis as Bill Dembro, Brandon Crane as Ben Hanscom, Adam Ferrizzell as Eddie Kasprak. I don't know if I said his name right. I misspoken. Ben Heller as Stanley Uris, Emily Perkins as Beverly Marsh, and my absolute favorite, we got Seth Green, Babyface Seth Green, as Richie Tozier. Beep, beep, Richie. Man, that is a hell of a cast. But getting into the movie, starting off right at the beginning, I do want to kind of give a nice little comparison. It's been forever since I've read the book, so I can't do like some type of retrospective on it right now. I'll have to go back and reread it, which will actually be kind of fun. But comparing it to the part one remake. So in the remake, we actually get, they just jump right into the Georgie, right? That was how everything was starting out. I mean, we're still getting the whole premise of Bill just not wanting to play with Georgie, and then he tries to be nice, makes the boat, and then, you know, Bob's your uncle, right? We all know what happened to you, to Georgie there. But as for the 90s version, we actually start off in the 80s. This, for the premise, was the introduction of Pennywise, and the fact that there was a killer clown out there. It starts off with a little girl, and she is riding her tricycle, and all of a sudden it starts to rain. Surprisingly, I think the majority of the sightings that, like when Pennywise shows up, a lot of it is when it starts to rain, which is, I never really made that connection. Like the scene with Georgie when he dies, it's raining, the little girl, it starts to rain. There was a couple of other scenes. I think it was about to rain, like when the kids were going down in the sewer. But again, it's like there's a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, like where it just kind of allows Pennywise to travel a little bit easier through through Derry. But who knows? But we get the probably one of my favorite little. It's such a quick and effective shot. I love freeze framing it because just seeing Tim Curry and that just with that face. The first one is the little girl's going back inside because it's about to rain, and all of a sudden she hears a giggle, and she looks over at the laundry that's hanging, and out of nowhere she just sees a smiling clown. And he's like, "Hi." And she doesn't feel, like, threatened. She doesn't feel danger. And then all of a sudden, the curtain, or, like, the little sheet moves just enough. And you just see that Tim Curry scowl. Just that nasty, just evil look. And it is so impactful. Like I said, if you have it on DVD, or if you can, I think it's streaming on, I believe HBO right now. I know you could rent it off of Amazon as well, but if you can pause it on that moment, it is so, so awesome. And it's very quick. I mean, it's a flash, and then it just, the camera flips around, and you can just see where it's like that slow motion to the girl and the panic on her face, and then it cuts to the mom coming out of the house and then finding the girl. And you don't see the carnage, but you could tell, like, it was a mess. And then, like, it just cuts right over to the ambulance taking the girl away. The mom's freaking out in the rain. And then we get to see older Mike Hanlon. Mike has been staying in Derry his entire life. He grew up to become the librarian of Derry, and he has been basically following the history. He has been, as everybody left Derry, and has always said that, you know, they would always come back if it came back. Well, he had this in his mind that he never wanted to forget, and he needed to be the anchor. And from what I remember of the book, that was a little different, where they didn't really have the anchor per se. Tommy Lee Wallace, like, he, as he was writing it, he noticed that there was no way. Oh, and also Cohen also thought of this as well. He actually did a kind of like a little storyboard, like if he was writing the story type of thing, where he had everything written out on cue cards, and then he had them like placed up in order, like if they were going to be, you know, shot by a camera. And he was like, "Well, how did you get from this point to this point?" And there's just missing gaps. So there's a lot of that. Even though the story does still make sense, it's for film, it just wouldn't work. It'd be too many holes type of thing. So what they ended up doing was they turned Mike into, like I said, the anchor of the film, where he's the one that gives a lot of the information that would have been missing in between those shots. For instance, when he is introduced as a child into the Losers Club, which I fucking love that that name. I actually have a Losers Club hat, which is amazing. But they, when he's introduced to the group and they become the Lucky Seven and the Losers Club, he sits down with them and he's showing them this book. And also when he's introduced at school, he's talking about, a lot of the history and things like that. And or he's talking about like the Easter fire. He's talking about one of the mills going bad. Like there's just all these problems that happen every so often, and they're unexplained instances. He's like, it's just very, very weird for Derry, and it's very dark, and it's just they can't figure it out. But then, like I said, jumping forward, when they become the Losers Club, he's sitting down with his photo book, and he's showing them all these old pictures. He's like, yeah, my dad says that, these pictures can't be. They're extremely old. Like they've just been around, for almost like 200 years. Like they just, and as they're flipping through, each kid at this point has had some type of run-in with this killer clown. And so now they're all freaking out. And then we get the most iconic scene from the film, where Penny, like the picture comes alive like something out of fucking Harry Potter, and out of nowhere you see the fucking Pennywise flipping and just coming down the street, and then he looks, sees the kids, and just the roar that comes out is just bone chilling. And then he just runs over to the lamppost, jumps up, and then just starts to give them the business where it's like, I'll kill you all. I'm the maker of nightmares. He's just like freaking all the kids out. And then he reaches out and his hand is coming out of the picture. It is so good. It's actually probably one of my all-time favorite scenes out of this movie, just because it is so effective. And it is like, and seeing all the terror on the kids' faces are, it makes it so much better. It's like, because I was afraid that maybe one of the kids wouldn't have been able to sell it, because it's like, oh, they're just looking at a book, and it's like, how are they going to be scared of something like that? But at the same time, it's like, it works. The whole gimmick is fantastic. Oh, and then after they shut the book, or Stanley like freaks out, closes his eyes, shuts the book, and then it flips open again to that picture. And everything's back to normal. It's just it's a standard picture. But that was a thing, was when Mike gets older, the rest of the group has, like later on in part two that we'll talk about, they end up forgetting. So Mike has to retell them about Pennywise, so that they start to, like, their memories start to flood back in. They kind of get it a little bit as we'll get into it here in just a second, but it was, like I said, it was just interesting for Mike to fill in those gaps where it was needed, and to give that kind of explanation into just the monster of that's been hovering around. And after that little girl dies, like I said, Mike is there and he's inspecting. He knows that something is up, but it's not until he's actually kicked off of the crime scene by the chief of police, who basically just says, I'm the chief and you're the librarian, just piss off. So that's when Mike ends up turning around, starts walking down the street, and as he's walking down, he looks and he sees this little piece of paper that's just leaning up against this tree in the rain. He walks over, picks it up, and it turns out that it's actually a photo of Bill's younger brother, Georgie, which this is what is the thing that sets Mike off, because for the, like I said, he's been, he has this feeling that something's not right. He doesn't know what it is, but seeing this picture, it gives him that confirmation that it is back in Derry and they need to get the seven back together so that they can go and kill it. And so Mike ends up going back to his library and he starts to call on everybody. The interesting thing is that every one of his friends became extremely successful in some type of field that they were in. Beverly became like a high-end fashion designer. She was working with when we see her, she's making a big sale with a bunch of with a Japanese bunch of businessmen, and so she's making tons of money. Ben is a fucking incredible architect. He was winning awards left and right. He's got his face on Time magazine for his work. It's really incredible. And then Bill, it's actually pretty funny because he is basically the Stephen King of the story. He became an incredible writer. He's got, awards for novels all over the place. And when we actually meet Bill, the older Bill, he is working on a movie with his, I believe it's his wife, and she's one of the main actresses. And she ends up, so he's working on the screenplay, and so he's kind of going nuts trying to, tighten things up because he doesn't want the production company to ruin his shit, which is hilarious because that's usually what ends up happening with Stephen King. He's just he was so worried after The Shining debacle with Kubrick that his properties were going to just be completely fucked over. And so he never really wanted to let anybody use his work without him either being there or without, having some type of hand or comfort level with the director. When Rob Reiner did Misery, it was great because Steven, met with Rob, and Rob explained what he wanted to do and just how much, he saw that there was an instant fan in Rob, and so he literally sold the rights to Misery for a dollar. I was like, that's how much he trusted Rob to respect the material. For as much as they could do in a movie, it still held up as far as for the story itself. But Bill, I could see being the same thing like that. And then we have Eddie, who is running a limo service. When he's a kid, he actually mentions that he wants to be a train conductor and travel the world type of thing. And so with this, it's kind of I feel like it's just an upper level kind of version of that, where he gets to travel around, but he's, carting off celebrities and important people. And he's just got fleets and fleets of limos and things like that. So, again, super, super successful in that case. Stanley, I believe, is a lawyer of some sort. We don't really get too much time with older Stanley, but I believe that's what he ended up being. Double check me if you need to, and let me know in the comments. But yes, all of Mike's friends are successful, and it's funny. It's they weren't successful until they actually left out of Derry, which means that Derry is just the end all be all, just hole, or just the pit, and just nothing good ever happens. And if you get stuck there, it's just mediocre. That's just the way that it just kind of works out. So the thing that I love about the way that they did the anchor portion of this is when Mike calls, the memories flood back in. And there's no way for the group to stop it. And it is so traumatizing for them that when they left Derry, it was like the cloud just went up and they just forgot everything. And really, if you really think about it, I mean, how many of us that are full-grown adults, you know, paying taxes and having kids and doing all, like, how many of us that are grown can remember shit like that just on the fly? Where, I mean, there was just something that may have happened that, you know, that you just wanted to try to forget, or you just go through. I mean, yeah, you always remember, like, the really good stuff, or, I mean, if there was something seriously bad, you might, again, it's like that kind of comes up. But, I mean, there are so many memories where I have to really, you know, open up the chest and try to let things out. So it's just, I like that little touch of, it's like, okay, well, when you get to be an adult, you try to forget, you know, that shit. But it was just easier, you know, that they were away from the problem. Now, there were some things about the memories with the kids that I was a little confused about. I couldn't tell if maybe they were doing it because it was a made-for-TV movie. But there were some that worked incredibly well. Like, so, I mean, I mean, I'm all about the movie in general, but it was just, there was a couple of times where I'm like, well, wait a second, like, what happened there? Like, how did that finish? It's like, you kind of gave me the start of it, but then, and got me going, and then you backed off, I think, a little bit too quick. I think there's a few more seconds of you know, more Pennywise. So, starting off, Mike ends up calling Bill first, and he tells Bill, it's back. I need you, come on back. And then instantly, Bill starts to remember the whole story with Georgie. And Bill, as a child, had a big stuttering problem. Like, it was so bad that Henry Bowers, the bully of the film, he would actually call Bill Mushmouth, because it was just, every single time Bill would open up his mouth, he would just be stuttering like crazy, and he just couldn't control it. Now, I don't think any of the other seven actually, like, I don't think they said anything about his stuttering or anything like that, just because it was a very touchy subject, because his stuttering did get worse after his brother's death. Now, what was really interesting is, like, towards the end of the first part of the movie, when they go down and they're about to, like, they're trying to, like, get into the mode of, like, going into battling Pennywise, and they're kind of getting set up and prepped, and they're getting the slingshot ready and all that good stuff. Richie actually notices that Bill's stutter's gone. Like, his focus is completely on target, and there is no problem. And later on, it's like, you know, with older Bill, same thing. Like, his stuttering is completely gone. He hasn't stuttered in years. And then after he gets this memory of, you know, from what happened with Georgie, the stuttering comes back. And it's very, very, very weird to see the adult Bill just start to stutter. And also that fucking ponytail that he has. Jesus Christ. Like, oh, that looks, it's just so bad. But I digress. Now, the whole scene with Georgie is so iconic. And especially, like, in the remake, it's probably one of the best scenes. Bill Skarsgård, like, I love him as the remake Pennywise. Like, it's just too good. And I kind of like that this Georgie from the 90s version wasn't the first kill that we see. I'm glad that they didn't start with that. Just because, like, setting it up later on, it kind of brings up more, allows you to, like, with the little girl, it allows you to see Pennywise first as, like, a quick glimpse to as to what you're about to get into. And then once you actually get into Georgie and, you know, Tim Curry is just being just so lovable and just very creepy all in one go. And there's those parts where he's asking, like, oh, do you want a balloon? Or, you know, I got cotton candy down here. We got a whole circus. And he's just trying to, as much as he can, to get Georgie in. Even Georgie does that whole Stranger Danger gimmick where he's like, oh, I'm not supposed to talk to strangers and stuff. And he's like, oh, that's very wise of you, Georgie. And he's like, well, listen, I'm Pennywise. You're Georgie. Now we know each other. And it's just like, it's so funny, and it's, again, terrifying because, like, I have two younger kids, and I worry about that all the time because both of my kids are really, really friendly, and so it's like, I try to tell them, it's like, if you don't know somebody, don't, again, stranger danger. So I try to be a good parent. I know, you know, Meg also tries to be a good parent as well. And, you know, I think we're doing really, really good with them. But yeah, it's stuff like that that you always have, just try to, like, you know, watch out for. But this, again, supernatural clown alien thing, you know, it kind of goes forward from there. But yeah, so Pennywise ends up luring him in with the boat. And then we get the kill scene. But what's awesome is that in this one, like, we get the big gnarly teeth, the close-up of Pennywise's face, but then it does the cutaway before we get to see anything. In the remake, they fucking show the whole goddamn thing. They show Georgie crawling away with no arm, and it's just, and then you see the hand reaching out, like, it's like over, like Stretch Armstrong style, grabbing Georgie by the leg and then just yanking him in to the sewer. Fucking great. Now, moving on to the next contestant there, I believe we go into Ben Henscombe. Now, as I mentioned, he is the world-renowned, just end-all, be-all, just an incredible architect type of man. Again, on Time magazines and winning awards. And when we meet him as an adult, he is drunk as a skunk. He just won Architect of the Year award. He goes to get out of his car and drops the award, and it breaks, and he just doesn't give a shit. He's just like, he gives it to his driver and he said, go ahead and recycle it. Now, the one thing as a kid watching this, and then, like, now like watching it as an adult, I had the same feeling where I got really jealous because I've always wanted a place like this. So the driver is taking him home, and his home is in this, I believe it's just this warehouse. So he goes through this garage, but then, like, he goes up this elevator into his main apartment, and it's, like, super well built out. It's, like, extremely comfortable. It's, like, very spacious. And the only time I've ever seen that where somebody else lives in, like, a warehouse type style that I got really jealous that I wanted when I was a kid was in fucking Wayne's World 2 when they ended up getting enough money to, like, go and buy that abandoned toy factory. I was like, I want that. Like, that would be amazing just to have this entire factory all to yourself. You can go up and down this elevator. I was like, that would be so boss. So I was very jealous of Ben on that. But he ends up getting the call from Mike, and then he ends up having the flashback. It turns out that Ben's dad passed away in the war. He was a fighter pilot, and obviously died in battle. So that left Ben and his mom to go and live with his aunt and cousin, who on the flip of that, are complete shitbags. The cousin is just a little, just big turd on his own. I mean, he just kind of just gives Ben so much shit, and then turned around, the aunt defends her son and says that Ben is the problem. He's the one that, you know, causes all the ruckus, and he's being spoiled, and the mom needs to, like, just take care of him and be, you know, stern with him, and not, you know, just make sure that he's being disciplined enough, and blah, like, all this other shit. Like, just, it's putting her nose in the shit that she doesn't need to. And because they have to live with their aunt right now until they can get their own place, they kind of have to go by their rules. And I've had those situations, and I know what that feels like, and it's definitely not fun. So Ben gets pissed off and runs away. Well, he ends up running into Henry Bowers. Again, the bully we'll talk about in a second. And in doing so, he has to fight off the bullies. And you know, after he kicks, I believe it was Henry in the chest, he falls over this ledge and he has to run away. And as he's running away, he runs into this pipe and the bullies run past him. But then they see both Bill and Eddie sitting there in the creek area trying to build a dam. Well, the bullies go over, start fucking with their shit, and then ask if they've seen the fat kid. They say no, and then the bullies leave. And then that's when Ben comes out, meets up with Bill and Eddie, and says, hey, thanks for, you know, not saying anything. And then it's almost like they become instant friends. And because, you know, Ben's going to have some type of architectural, you know, prowess in the future there, somehow he's like, hey, well, I'll help you guys build a dam. Like, this is, you know, he has, like, this idea that, you know, should work. So, they kind of, again, instant friends. Like, they're just like, okay, cool, let's go. But after that, it's a little bit later, so they're down by, I guess they're about to leave, and as they're, well, they all leave, but then Ben is down by the creek, and there is a sewer system that's across the way. It almost looks like a castle. I don't know exactly what the purpose of it is, but it looks like a medieval castle that's across the swampy area. And as Ben is just sitting there, just kind of just not having a good time with the dealing with the bullies and the home life and everything else, he's just trying to just think and just be, you know, in his own thoughts. And all of a sudden he hears his dad, and his dad is calling to him. And he looks up, and there he is. His dad is standing in the swamp waving at him. And Ben has no idea what the hell to do. And his dad's like, Ben, like, come on, buddy. Like, this is where I live now. It's like, you know, you could come over here and float with me. We all float down here. And as his dad is talking to him, it's the voice is changing in and out from his dad to Pennywise. And then as, like, the camera keeps flipping, so it'll show the dad flip over to Ben and then go back to his dad. And his dad's in a military uniform, but then as the camera keeps flipping back to him, he slowly starts to have clown gimmicks all over him. Like, he has, like, the puffy orange balls on his jacket, or the frills around the neck. And then he's, like, holding balloons. And so it's slowly turning into Pennywise. And then finally we see the clown, and he just starts laughing and pointing. And then he just fades away. And then out of nowhere, a fucking skeleton comes out of the goddamn water saying, Ben, like, we all float down here. And it's just, and then it cuts away. So that is a really good setup because it builds on the whole premise of Ben dealing with home life and bullies and things like that. And again, not wanting to be the fat kid later on in life and, you know, being successful and all that good shit. Then we move on over into Beverly Marsh's story. So hers is very... It sucks really bad. That's the only way that you can really put it. It's, I mean, every kid had some type of bad problem, but hers, I think, had to be the worst. So as a kid, she ends up like going in, or she has an abusive father, and he's abusive on all levels. Like, he's abusive verbally, and then he controls her so much that when he doesn't get his way, he is not afraid to lay his hand on her. And people like that really, really make me sick. I can't deal with stuff like that. And it's like when it gets to that point of just manipulating someone so much and controlling them to where they basically just become your dog and your whipping post. And it's just, it's really, really shitty. So Ben, he is now grown very, very fond of Beverly, and he has decided that he is going to write her a poem, right? Super sweet. It is an incredible little poem. And he decides that he's going to go and drop it on her doorstep, ring the bell, and then run away, right? And then just see, you know, what her reaction is. And she ends up opening the door, seeing the letter, sees it. But then later on, she kind of has this feeling that she has no idea that it was Ben who would write it. She has this feeling that it's Bill, because he's the writer and he's, you know, the wordsmith of the group type of thing. So she kind of has a thing for Bill, and it's kind of sad on Ben's part because, you know, he's the chubby kid. He doesn't feel like he's going to be able to get the girl, and he's kind of, unsure about himself. And it's very, very sad because I also see myself that way too. But when it comes, so Beverly takes the letter inside, and then her dad pops in like really quick. He's like, "Hey, what is that?" And he takes it from her and reads it, and he's like, "Oh, you're getting letters from boys?" He's like, "You're not going to do anything. You're my girl. You're not going anywhere. You're not, dealing with it." And he just starts like, and he starts smacking her around. And then she backs away from him. He's like, "You come over here. Don't make me go over there and get, retrieve you." And she says no. And she kind of stands up for herself. And he freaks out, tries to, go after her. And she runs out of the house, which is not the feeling that you really want when you get like a really sweet letter and then, you're fucking terrorized by your parent like that. She runs out, runs away, and Ben is in the bushes, and he sees, he sees her flee the house, and he sees the dad screaming at Beverly. And so he decides that he's going to go off and make sure that she's okay. And he does, he ends up, startling her because she's behind a bush, crying and trying to calm down. And then he goes, "Hey, well, I know it's Saturday, and if you're not doing anything, do you want to, come down to the Barrens with us?" So she agrees and goes down there, and that's when she becomes a part of the new group. It wasn't until a little bit later on when she ends up going back to her house. Clearly, the situation died down long enough for her to be able to be in her own home. She's getting ready for bed. Her dad is in the living room watching a really old ABC program. And she's in the bathroom. And all of a sudden she hears voices coming from her sink. And she looks down. And she's like, oh, Beverly, you need to help us. We're all the dead kids. And they start, you know, spraddling off a whole bunch of names. And then out of nowhere, you hear this rattling. And then just poof, a big old squirt of blood just pops right up and gets right in the face. Again, I like what they did in the remake where the blood just went like, you know, kind of like Nightmare on Elm Street, where it's just, it just spewed out and just would not stop. It caused for a really, really satisfying scene. But Beverly gets the blood in the face. And then she freaks out, calls for her dad. Dad comes, rushes in. He's like, what happened? And the crazy thing is that she is looking and she's like, there's blood everywhere. And she's kind of like, you don't see it. And he has no idea what she's talking about. He's got his hands all over the bloody sink. And she's like, oh, I saw a spider. And yeah, like it must have went down the drain and all this stuff. So he's looking down the drain. He doesn't see anything. I love that she actually says it was a spider, even though they haven't seen its final form, which we'll get into, you know, the next time. But I like that kind of keeps coming back with a little bit of a reference. I don't know if they meant to do that or not, but I'm going to take it as a nice little reference. But he doesn't see it, and he's like, Beverly, I worry about you, girl. And then he just walks away, and the blood is still there. Later on, the seven, like, she's trying to tell the rest of the boys about what happened. And, you know, since they're all starting to, you know, understand, like, what Pennywise is, and she shows them the sink. And so the boys are like, we can't leave this here. So they end up cleaning the sink up with her. So that was really cool. But now jumping forward into Beverly's adult years, it's sad because she ends up having a relationship with her partner with her company. He's she's the designer and he's the businessman. Like, he's the guy that sells everything. But he's extremely abusive to her, like, just to the point of just being a complete and total shitbag. The first scene that we actually see him in, that's when Beverly's just got the call from Mike from Derry, and the partner, the boyfriend, whatever you want to call him, he ends up saying, like, oh, like, no, we can't, we got a business deal, we can't get distracted, just take down the number and, you know, call back later. And so the receptionist, she's like, she doesn't know what to do. Beverly's like, oh no, we got some time, I'll just take the call, let me do it. And the guy's like, no, like, you're not, take the number down and just, that's it, that's what I said, do what I say. And makes it very, very awkward. The receptionist leaves. And then the guy gets up. He's like, all right, you ready to do this? Like, we got a big business meeting with a bunch of Japanese buyers. Like, we got to, like, if we do this sale, we're going to make a lot of money. And he's like, yeah. So he's like, okay, give me a kiss for good luck. She gives him a kiss. And then he goes, hey, and don't ever talk that way in front of Debbie like that ever again. He's like, and he's really threatening her in I don't know, like, how to really put it, but it was just like, it was like, what a shitty thing to do. It's just like, you know what, don't ever, you know, make me look stupid in front of anybody else ever again. So later on that night, she ends up, like, calling or getting the message from Mike that, you know, it is back, and that's when her memories come back. So she instantly, like, starts to pack up. And the boyfriend comes back up and he's just like, where are you going? And she was like, I have to go back to Derry. There's an emergency. Like, I have a friend that needs me. And he smacks the shit out of her and says, oh, like, you think I'm fucking stupid? It's like, you're just going to go off with some old boyfriend and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, right after we just made this huge deal, it's like, no, you're not leaving and all this other stuff. And then she ends up, like, backing away, grabbing a whole bunch of like heavy shit and just starts throwing it at him, and then finally cracks him right in the face and kind of knocks him loopy for a little bit. And then she's like, if you ever come near me ever again, like, I will kill you. And she fucking bounces, and it's very, very satisfying for her to get that little shot in. But a little part of me kind of wishes that there was maybe a little bit more of like a defending from her, just because it's like, I like seeing that that kind of aggressive, like, don't fuck with me, Beverly Marsh type of thing. They do that pretty good in the remake with the little girl. Like, I mean, they're like, she fucking stands up to Pennywise a couple times, which is pretty cool. So, like, that is something with Beverly. But then a couple of the really quick ones was there is the Richie Tozier one. That one, they kind of set it up with the movie I Was a Teenage Werewolf. And they're at the movies, and he's got this run-in with Henry Bowers again. Like, he pours, like, they're on the balcony, and Henry and his gang is below him on the first level, and they accidentally knock a whole bunch of popcorn off the balcony, and they knock it onto Henry, and then as Henry's looking up, Richie takes a soda and pours it onto the bullies, and they all run. But Richie's also, before all that mess, they're watching the movie, and he's actually freaking out over the werewolf bit. Like, that's actually scaring him. A little bit later, they're at school, and he has another run-in with Henry. Henry pushes his lunch tray onto him, makes a mess, and then as Richie is running away, he accidentally runs into the principal and knocks his food over. Principal gets pissed off and says, all right, go get a mop. You know, you're in big fucking trouble. So Richie goes down to the custodian's boiler room to grab this mop. And as he's there, this fucking thing shuffles out of the darkness, and it's a fucking werewolf. Like, it's the werewolf from the movie. And Richie doesn't know what the fuck to think. Like, he has no idea. Like, he's like, it just doesn't feel like that should be a real, like, there should not be something right there that's got fur and claws and teeth and everything else. It's fucking creepy as shit. And it rushes at him, it grabs him, and it's holding him. And then out of nowhere, it lets go. And then it turns around, or Richie turns around, and it's the clown. And it laughs, but it gives it, you know, Pennywise gives the iconic beep, beep, Richie. And it is just absolutely fantastic. And if you don't know what the beep, beep, Richie thing is, the Losers Club would say beep, beep, Richie when Richie was talking too much. It was their way of saying, like, all right, go ahead and, you know, pipe down, Richie, or, you know, take a break, or you're going too far, or what have you, type of thing. But so that was his run-in. And then we get into Eddie's. And Eddie's is really cool just because of the shower scene. So Eddie's mom is very controlling. I guess it would definitely be manipulative to a point. In the remake, very manipulative. I mean, she was worse in the remake. But in the 90s film, she made it so that Eddie could, like, he wasn't really allowed to go out and play with other kids. She even says, like, oh, the only friend that you need is your mother. Even, like, when Eddie gets older, his mom is still living with him. He can never have a relationship with anybody. Like, it's just, she is just, you have to be with me and only me, and that's it. I mean, I don't know if it was the type of thing where, he said that his dad died from cancer, and because of that, I'm assuming that his mom, you know, she's like, she doesn't have anybody else, and she, you know, needs that type of, like, she's clinging on to Eddie as much as she possibly can. So that was the thing, was when she actually tells Eddie, like, oh, when you go to school, no gym, or don't go to gym class, and because she doesn't want him playing with the other kids for fear that he's going to get sick. And then also he's not allowed to shower because of the, you know, of the same premise. And the thing is like, so Eddie was coming out of gym and the gym teacher stops him and says, hey, didn't you go to gym class? Cool. The rules are, if you go to gym, you take a shower. Like, that's just what you do. So get back in there, go take a shower, and then you can go to class. So that's when, like, Eddie's all by himself. He turns on the shower heads, but then out of all of them, they all start turning on. And it's all, like, boiling water type of thing. So it's like Eddie was, like, trying not to touch any of them, and it's very, very intense. And then out of nowhere, you hear Pennywise from the drain, and he starts to – pokes up his hand, knocks the little drain cover off. He's like, wow, this is a little tight. Hold on, let me fix something for you. And then he spreads out the hole to give himself room. He just pops up and he's like, how you doing there, Wheezy? And he's like, don't bother running. It's like, I'm just going to get you. And then he does the whole like shark teeth thing again, and it freaks Eddie out. And then it cuts back to Eddie as an adult having the flashback as he's on the way to the train to head on back over to Derry. Now, for the last one, we're going to head on over to Stanley. Now, the interesting thing with Stanley is that they altered his little flashback of how he actually saw Pennywise for the first time. In the story, they were supposed to go to this old rickety house. And again, Stanley is a Boy Scout, and he's extremely scared of everything. Like, he doesn't want to believe in anything supernatural. He doesn't want to, I think it's because he does believe in it so much that he doesn't want it to be real. And it turns out where he is, he's in this house with Eddie, and they're all of a sudden being chased by this mummy. And it's supposed to be like your Boris Karloff style, you know, universal mummy monster. I believe, if I'm correct, if my memory serves me correct, that there was supposed to also be since there was a werewolf, there was also supposed to be a vampire, and I think there's supposed to be like another kind of like universal style like movie monster that Pennywise was going to take the form of, but I think there's a lot of them they couldn't get the like initial rights to. So Mummy was really easy to kind of get around, and then they made the teenage werewolf. So, again, they can kind of use, you know, a werewolf of sorts for Richie. But there's a scene, I think, in the second film, or in the second part of this film, where Stanley is supposed to be running away, and he's on his bike with Eddie, and they're getting away from the mummy. It's a very, very short scene, but that's supposed to be the initial, like, first story for Stanley that we see. But in this one, the initial, like, first meeting of Pennywise is when they're down, when they're trying to do battle with Pennywise down in the sewer, and Henry Bowers shows up and tries to fuck with all the, you know, or basically tries to kill all the kids. And that's when the deadlights come through. And this is where Pennywise is in his true form. And he's sucking up all the bullies and all this other shit. And that's when Stanley, like where we see him as the first official meet and greet type of thing. And that was the thing. It was like, so I kind of wish that they did a little bit more with Stanley. In the remake, I believe they did quite a bit with him. And it made him a little bit more likable. They did the whole scene where, you know, with Stanley's family, his dad was a rabbi. And there was this picture in his dad's office that freaked him out. It was this picture of a lady with a flute, and it just was so unsettling. And so that was a really cool thing for Stanley, and they kept up with that as it went through. But yeah, with Stanley's, it was very, very short, but I think they tried to make it a little bit more impactful. But I kind of wish that they gave us a little bit more of the mummy thing, instead of it just being like a quick little flash in the later movie. Now, I keep mentioning Henry Bowers. As far as the last shitbag to talk about in this movie, this kid is such a terrible, terrible, terrible person. They throw out the N-word easy, like they do not hold back. And it's one of those, like, I think the last time I've ever heard, like, a movie use the N-word just so freely was Blazing Saddles. And I mean, that's my all-time favorite comedy. And it, because it's a huge satire on racism and everything else, and it's like it kind of turns it on its head. But it's just one of those things for Henry Bowers as a kid, and he's talking to Mike that way, and it's just like, holy shit. Like, that's, again, it's the 50s, and I mean, again, that's just kind of like what, you know, we all know that's what happened back then, which really, really sucks, and it's stupid. But it's just like, it's just weird, like, hearing, you're like, whoa, like, especially, like, in a TV, like, it's a TV movie. They didn't bleep it or cut, I don't know if they ever cut it or what, but it's just like, holy shit, like, that, if that was something they needed to cut, like, I would probably do that first. But Henry was really just terrible in every scene that he possibly could be in. A lot of the school scenes, like, he's that kid that just sits in class. If somebody's, like, presenting something to the class, he's always got something to say about it, and it's always negative, and it's just always awful. And then, like, there's a couple, like, he always blames everybody else for him getting in trouble. For instance, he's got it out for Ben almost instantly. Mainly because Ben was fat. That's it. When Ben is being introduced to the class, the teacher's doing that whole thing of making him stand up in front of the class and, you know, tell him about yourself type of thing. And he's like, you know, I love, you know, reading about history and everything else. He's like, I love Egyptian stuff, and I love, you know, just ancient, you know, Roman history and all that, you know, nonsense. And Henry just chimes in. He's like, God, what a porker. And, like, you know, shit like that. Just, you know, making fun of his weight type of thing. And then the teacher gets pissed off and says, all right, Henry, go to the principal's. I was like, you're going to be in detention for an hour after school every day this week. And Henry's just like, oh, but my dad's going to, you know, tan my hide if he finds out. And she's like, well, you should have, you know, thought of that before you started, you know, making fun of Ben. And so as Henry's walking out the class, he turns to Ben and says, it's like, you're dead meat. And it's just like, Ben's like, what the hell did I do? It's like, you're the one that was just chirping on me. I didn't say anything to you. And so now Ben's got this target on his back. for absolutely no reason. And then, like, later on, he ends up getting around the bullies after school, and he's on his way home, but then accidentally runs into them on the street. So he runs into, and it's Henry Bowers. The other one is Belch, and I believe it is, if I could, Patrick. I believe Patrick, yeah, Patrick's the other guy. So he runs into all three of them, and Henry pulls out his switchblade knife, and he goes to, like, cut Ben's stomach, and the other boys are like, Henry, you're not going to actually do it. You're not going to cut him, are they? And Henry's like, oh, what, I'm going to cut him? You want me to cut him? I'll cut, like... And he goes to cut him, and then that's when Ben kicks him and you know, goes down the hill there. But it's just one of those things where it's so intense where you just don't know what this kid is going to do. And he's just a complete firecracker that could just go off at any time. And then there's, like, the other scene where he's chasing Mike, and that's when he ends up getting with the rest of the group at that point. Well, the rest of the group, the Losers Club, decided that they were just going to go get a shit ton of rocks, and they were going to stand up to Henry. They were like, we're not taking this anymore. And they just start chucking rocks at him, and they drive the bullies away. But after they do that, that's when Henry's like, you guys are all fucking dead. He's like, I'm going to get you some at some point. You're all dead. And then he goes away. And then he follows them towards the end of the movie into the sewer, and he tells him, the rest of the bullies, Belch and Patrick, to kind of follow them, lead them off, and then kind of direct them towards Henry so that he can basically kill them in the sewer without them, you know, causing a ruckus or anything like that. Like, he's trying to make it an easy out. But then that's when Pennywise shows up. He ends up killing Patrick and Belch. Belch is very unsettling because the deadlights burst through this pipe, causing a hole. And then it ends up the light shines over. Like, so I believe it was Stanley. Stanley looks away. He hides his eyes. But then Henry is staring at the deadlights, and it turns his hair white. Like, so he had, like, this black hair with the, you know, the greaser curl in the front, and then it just goes straight white, like old man white style. But then Belch, he ends up getting taken into the tunnel, like, into the pipe, but he's being dragged through, and it, like, the sandwiches him in, but you could tell, like, he's dead, and his eyes are just, like, just... The lifeless face is just unsettling. So it's sucking him through, and you could hear just Pennywise, just the roar, and then the little, like, it almost sounds like he's, like, slurping and gulping, like, at the same time. It's weird. But that was another thing, was, like, the deadlights. That was the way that Pennywise would help to consume kids, was, like, it would kind of, like, hypnotize you, or it would kind of, like, suck the life out of you so that it would make you easier to eat, type of thing. He didn't use it all the time, but that was kind of, like, the essence of what his being was, and it was the deadlights. Now, once the kids get into it, so we got through all of the backstories, and that's basically what this whole movie is it's a lot of setup, but it is needed, and it's great seeing that whole back and forth with the adults remembering, and then it shows you what they dealt with as a kid, and then it kind of, you know, moves forward from there. Now, once you got into the final fight scene, that is where they all come together, and they are trying to make sure that they try to stay together. Earlier on in the movie, they were all down by the Barrens, and they made this big dam, and they're blocking off all this water. And then out of nowhere, this fucking cop shows up, and he's like, oh my God, like, what is happening down there? And he comes, he walks down, and he's like, oh, like whose idea was this? And he's like, you guys are going to flood the whole town if you guys don't, like, take this thing down. But it's, like, funny because he's, like, typical Irish cop. And it's just like, how more stereotypical could you get for that type of character type of thing? It's just really, really funny. And so Irish cop basically tells him, like, okay, well, if you guys are going to come down here, you need to make sure that you guys all stay together, always come down as a group, never separate. And he makes them promise that, you know, they're always going to come down together. And so that was kind of like the thing. So once they actually go into battle, they all have to, like, they're staying together. They're holding hands in a circle because they don't know where Pennywise is. And then Stan, being the weakest of the group and the most scared, he's sitting there reciting his, I guess, the Boy Scout mantra. And out of nowhere, he hears, how you doing, Stan? And then he looks over and he holds his hand up and he's holding hands with Pennywise. And then Pennywise picks him up and then takes him over. And that's when he tells the kids that, yes, like, be afraid. Like, your fears, it makes you taste so much better. And that was something that I absolutely love, is that he uses it to tenderize his meals, is what it is. Like, yeah, he could just go and just start slaughtering kids, picking them off, but it's like the taste of them and taste of that fear really just, it's like a really, really well-seasoned steak. Like, that's just the best way that I can think about it. As far as it being morbid for him eating kids. But that was the thing, was like, so he uses his abilities to terrorize kids so that they taste better for their fear. Now, out of nowhere, so all the kids are, they're trying to, you know, stop it, essentially. And Eddie is the one that walks right up to him with his inhaler and says, this is battery acid, you slime, and then sprays it in his face, and then it starts to melt Pennywise. For the longest time, I had no idea why that would even happen. I was like, because it's not battery acid. They were just saying it tasted like battery acid. And it's like, well, was Pennywise just messing with them? Or, like, what was the whole gimmick? It wasn't until the remake happened where I kind of understood that it's like, oh, it was because if they're not afraid, then it hurts him more. And because Eddie stood up to him, and I never got that. I never got that it was because Eddie stood up to him and he wasn't afraid that it hurt for that, or whatever he was doing. And then it was like right after that, you get that really awesome melted face Pennywise, and he just looks so pissed off. And it looks so good. And just that, again, Tim Curry behind everything is just, it makes everything so much better, because you're getting all those Tim Curry just mannerisms and just that anger and just that voice behind it is so good. But yeah, you get that face, and then Beverly takes the silver and shoots it with the slingshot, hits him in the head, and then you can see the deadlight shining through his skull. And then he ends up doing this flip over the kids into the drain, and then goes, you know, sucks himself down to, you know, back down into the abyss to have him be seen again. Well, the kids don't know if they actually killed him or not, but they know that they defeated him and that they're still alive. And that's when Bill says, okay, promise me if he's not gone, it's like that we won't. That we'll all come back. Like, we're not going to leave. We're going to come back and make sure that this thing is officially dead. And that's when they make the pack. I like in the remake where they do the blood pack. That is more of a connection thing that I'm okay with compared to the book with the, hey, let's all have sex and then do all that nonsense. That's fine. But as far as the movie goes, I absolutely love this one. And I think a lot of fans do as well. The one thing that always threw me off was why in all of the early just memories that these kids were, or you know, that the adults were having about their childhoods, why did Pennywise always just leave them? For instance, like in Eddie's, in the bathroom scene, he had Eddie just pinned in a corner. He's all by himself. He's already scared to shit, so he's probably going to be very tasty. But he's literally all by himself, can't do anything. Why didn't Pennywise just get out and just gobble him up? Why did he just leave him there? And that was something where it's like, there are so many other kids in this film. Like later, like there's a couple times where like Beverly's like, oh yeah, there was a girl that died that was in my class, or there was other kids around the neighborhood that they knew that was also taken and killed. But it's like, but why didn't Pennywise do that with Eddie? Or why didn't he do that with Stanley when they were by themselves? Or Richie when he was down in the boiler room? Like, why didn't he just kill him right then? Because Richie was really, really scared at that time. And it was, I mean, yeah, he was having fun with him. But again, he's all by himself. He could have had an easy meal. And that's what I don't understand. The Beverly thing, he probably could have gotten her if he was, you know, gonna, you know, come out of the sink or what have you. But I don't think she was initially as scared as the other kids until he did the blood thing. So I think it was like he needed to kind of go after her a little bit more. But it's like for this little group, I don't understand why he was not just going after them as easy as he possibly could. Like it was just like he was playing with his food, I think, a little too much. But other than that, I mean, I still say that this movie is absolutely fantastic. And I go for, yes, you're supposed to put part one and part two together to make a full movie. But for just this part one, I'm going to give it a solid, I'm going to give this a 5. I fucking love this goddamn film. It is so iconic. It is incredible. I was trying to, you know, no sell it, but I can't. Like, I fucking love this film. Other than the only little nitpicky thing that I have is why did Pennywise leave him? But even then, I still love all those goddamn scenes. They're absolutely fantastic. There's a couple little, like, cringy bits. But I think it's just more because it's of the time, of the 90s type of thing. So, again, you just kind of give it the pass. Like, the hair, or when older Richie is doing, like, the talk show thing, he's doing, like, a really bad, like, Godzilla joke, and it's just, I mean, it's Richie being Richie. But other than that, like, this movie's fucking phenomenal. I absolutely love Tim. Like, Tim Curry is just a gem. He is an absolute treasure of a man. I think it's really sucks that, you know, what's happening, like, with his health and things like that, but I mean, all the way from, you know, just all of his earlier films for, like, Rocky Horror. Like, I absolutely love him in Clue. I loved him in fucking, what was it, McHale's Navy. Like, he just had so many fucking phenomenal roles. And I mean, like, I'm not going to sit here and just name them all, but, like, those are some of my favorites. But it's just, Tim Curry is an icon, and him as Pennywise is just like, this is where my love of clowns, I believe, started. It was it was because of Pennywise and just the creepiness. It worked. And then it's like so now it's like I have this weird obsession with clowns, like going for the remake of it, and then, you know, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, and it's just like all it just keeps on going to the point of it almost being unhealthy, or it's like I have a couple of friends that have the clown phobia, and every time they see like me post something about clowns, they're like, Craig, you got to take that down. I can't look at that shit anymore. It's just, so it's funny in that aspect. But the thing is, like, this movie's fucking great. I'm going to give it a 5, like, for the first part. It still holds up, even it being a 90s movie. The It story is probably one of my favorites of all time. So, I mean, you got, like, it goes up there with, like, Jaws, Shaun of the Dead, It, Thing. I mean, it just, all that stuff. It's just, and on top of that, Pennywise is probably one of my favorite monsters. I mean, like, if you put them up next to, like, you know, like Jason, Freddy, you know, any of those type of characters, like, he's probably one of my favorite monsters. Just that whole aspect of him being this ancient godlike creature that has been around for centuries, and he comes back every 27 years basically to feed, and then he's only feeding on things with fear, just to kind of tenderize it a little bit more, which means it's like if he came down like during like the dinosaur times, it's like, is he trying to like scare a dinosaur to eat it? Like, how is that working out? I kind of want to see like more of that. I guess there's supposed to be a HBO is supposed to be coming out with a new dairy show that's supposed to be like, I guess it's supposed to tell the tale of different kids around the town and just kind of like their stories dealing with Pennywise. So yeah, we're getting more Skarsgård, which is fucking great. I'm so excited for that. I really do hope it's good. And one thing about this film was that they were actually trying to make it a 10-hour, like it was supposed to be like a multiple episode show. It was supposed to be kind of like on the same vein of like Walking Dead or like Game of Thrones type of thing, just where it's like they would take like each episode and it would like be dedicated to one kid. And, like, they would go through and really sprawl out, like, a 30-minute, you know, episode dedicated to one character until it got to the point where they could then combine them all and then do the big, you know, final battle scene and things like that. So I thought that would have been really, really good if you could make that into, like, a TV show for sure. But for what we got, I think it was, you know, just fine. I'm really happy with it, and I can't wait for next week when we get into part 2, because we'll probably have some more to talk about on that end for sure. But I love this movie. I hope you guys do as well, and I would love to hear from you guys and see what you guys actually thought. So please send me an email at creepingitreal.cm@gmail.com, or as we said, go to Instagram or Facebook at Creepin' It Real, R-E-E-L, and just let me know. And also, like I said, thanks to Paula for, you know, giving the suggestion as well. And so, yeah, always drop me a suggestion of what you guys want me to review. I'm always down to, you know, see what we can find for sure. Oh, and also, on the topic of merch, I got a whole bunch of it. So you guys can always go to our Instagram link in our bio. It'll send you right to our Redbubble page. From there, you'll be able to actually go through, look at all of my designs. If you pick out one that you like, it'll allow you to then go and you can pick out things from like t-shirts and hoodies and cell phone cases, bath mats. They got shit for your dog, your cat. Like, there's so much on there to choose from. So, I mean, again, it helps me out a lot, just repping out the podcast. But on top of that, you get to wear a pretty decent, you know, pretty cool shirt, if I do say so myself. I think two of my favorite little designs, there's one, it's like a skull with like a heart dripping over it, and it's like, I called it my love skull. That one's probably, it's one of my own original designs, so I really love that one. And then there's also Married to the Gore, which is a bloody bride, and she's got two like meat cleavers, and it's really cool. So I like that one a lot. That design took me quite a while to do, so I'm pretty proud of those. But yeah, definitely I love it. Thank you guys so much for being here this week. I can't wait for next week when we get into part two. So I want you guys to always remember, your hair is winter fire, January embers, my heart burns there too.